am I a disciple of Jesus Christ? Our gospel passage today captures the end of a long discourse about what it means to be a disciple. What are the challenges and demands of being a disciple of Jesus? And it reminded me of a study that was done a number of years ago by Princeton theological professor Kendra Dean. And she did a survey of Christians across the nation, Catholics, Christians of all denominations, to see what people really believed. Who did they think Jesus was? What did they think Christianity was? And what she found out, or how she put it at least, the way she summarized her results was that a majority of Christians didn't actually believe in Christianity, but followed what she called therapeutic moralistic deism. And how's that defined? Well, going backwards, deism. People believe that God exists. People believe that God created them and that, you know, he's out there somewhere. Moralistic. God wants me to be a good person. And good people go to heaven. Therapeutic. Religion makes me feel good. I have that hope. And when bad things happen or when I need help, I can call on God. You know, I get a Pez dispenser and God will help me. Therapeutic moralistic deism. But if we actually follow that, Jesus' demands in the gospel today don't make much sense. Or they're hard to follow. Because this therapeutic moralistic deism is a gospel about us. A gospel. I'll go to heaven if I'm a good person. And God will step in to help me whenever I need him, whenever I call on him. If I'm happy, God's happy. And all that Christian doctrine stuff, that, you know, all that teaching stuff, is just nice. They're thoughts, they're ideas, you know, that you can think about if you want to. So when we hear the gospel today, when we hear Jesus say, "You must," or "whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me," we could be tempted to think, "Well, I'm a good person. I love Jesus. I'm good to go." But that's so boring and that's so dull. That doesn't give, you know, the newness of life that St. Paul says that being baptized into Christ's death gives, a newness of life. And even Jesus says, "Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. We'll find true life. We'll find life." And he says in John's gospel, "I came that you may have life and have it abundantly." That's what following the true gospel should give. And kind of this moralistic deism, it can't do that. It doesn't do that. That would be a gospel about us. A gospel of our doing. I be a good person. I call on the all-powerful being whenever, you know, I need him. But what is the real gospel? What is the true gospel? How do we make this make sense? God became a man. He became a human being. He became a person, a real living person in the person of Jesus. And he approaches us. He approaches us as a person, as another person. He's not an idea. He's not a thought. He is a real, living, alive person. He walked the earth. And now he lives forever, truly lives as a person in heaven. That is the true gospel message. And then we realize that that person is different from every other person. Jesus is different. And we know in our hearts, we have this desire. We have a great desire for the fulfillment of happiness, for true, lasting happiness. But in our experience, we find on earth that nothing can give that. There's a lot of like temporary happinesses and nice things, but nothing can give that full happiness that we desire in the depths of our heart. But maybe, just maybe, this person whom we encounter, this Jesus, maybe he has the answer. Maybe he is the answer to that happiness. And then we know, and we also have the desire for true, perfect love. We want to be loved. We want to live in a perfect relationship of love. But we know through our experience that on earth, we can't find it. That other people are good. We have great loving relationships, but they're imperfect. And so that desire is not matched. But maybe, just maybe, this person, this Jesus, if he is who he claims to be, if he is God, maybe he can do that for us. Maybe he can love us perfectly. And so we invite him in. We enter into a true personal relationship with this person. And just maybe our hopes and dreams will be fulfilled. Kind of metaphorically, in the first reading, the old woman prepares a place in her home for the prophet Elisha. He is a man of God. She recognizes that, so she prepares a place for him so he can come in and stay. She brings in, really, the voice of God. She brings in the closest thing she can get to God, this prophet. She brings him in to her home. She makes a place for him. And when he comes in, he brings life. He brings the newness of life to that family. Beyond hope, she has a son. So getting back to the gospel, when Jesus says we must take up our cross and follow after him, if we know that he is the person and we're following after him, we don't do it out of duty. We don't just take up our cross because we have to. No, we take it up as a response of love. We take it up because we want to, because we don't want to be anywhere else than behind this man. And when he says we must love him more than mother, father, son, or daughter, it's not a tyrannical imposition. It's not the demand of a jealous God. It's the conclusion. It's the result of having a personal relationship with him who is the very meaning of life. So today, we hear these words. Let's let Jesus' words challenge us. Let's let them shake us up. And maybe reconsider the gospel we're following. Are we disciples of this hazy, nice, feel-good deism? Or are we followers of a person? The man who fulfills the dreams and hopes of our heart, the man who is the very meaning of life, the man who is God. Are we disciples? Are we followers of Jesus?